You ever thought about the food you eat? Probably, I'm sure you do, to some extent. You ever thought about the fact that 70% of your food is processed? That's kind of scary to think about. So, I was thinking about food the other day, and I was thinking about, I was scrolling through Facebook, wasting my time, and I saw something on there that I found pretty interesting. It's something that I wouldn't have known had not been for Facebook, actually, because I would have never traveled. I probably won't ever travel to Europe. I shouldn't say never, but at this point, I keep having kids, I kind of doubt it. But did you know that Fanta looks like that in Europe? Isn't that kind of crazy? You ever had it? Raise your hand if you ever had a Fanta. Oh man, I love Fanta. Fanta's delicious. And it's awful for you, but it's delicious. I love Fanta. And we all recognize Fanta by that bright orange color. But if you were to go to Europe, you would not find Fanta that looks like this. You'd find Fanta that looks more like orange juice. That's kind of strange. Anybody like Fruit Loops? It's okay to raise your hands, because I like Fruit Loops. I'm an adult. Thank you. You're making me feel better. You like Fruit Loops still? So if you were to go to Europe, you would find that your Fruit Loops look a little bit different. Europe's on the right, ours is on the left. Do you see those bright colors? See those bright colors? See, whenever people from Europe come over here and they look at our cereal, they're like, what is wrong with this stuff? What have you dipped it in? What's wrong with it? And even something as subtle as M&M's. This is kind of more of a subtle difference, but if you do notice, one is a little more dull than the other, right? So we can tell the color, one on the right is Europe, one on the left is ours. Food coloring does that, right? Food dyes. Do you guys know where the majority of food dyes actually come from? It comes from petroleum. You know where, well, I mean, you know what petroleum is. You fill up your car with gas, you put oil in your engine, but they actually derive food coloring from petroleum. Now, they guarantee that it's safe and that it's not going to hurt you and that they got all the oil out of it, but they just took it from that, right? They tell us that we're going to be fine. But nonetheless, we do this to our food. Why? Did you know that we waste about 6 billion pounds of fresh vegetables and foods every year that come off the farm? A lot of those vegetables are because they look like this. They're ugly. That is an ugly carrot. Who would want that carrot? The American people say, not us. I wouldn't want that carrot. Leave it in the ground. We don't want it. So we have a lot of food that goes to waste, a lot of food that goes to waste, simply because it's ugly. It doesn't fit the norm of what we feel like it should look like. And therefore, it's not likely to sell at the store. Oh, the tanning bed. I'm not going to make you raise your hand if you use this one, because I might shame you a little bit. Don't do this. You are roasting your skin. You are increasing your chances of cancer. This is a bad idea. But we see that young men and young women all over the United States, and world, but all over the United States will jump in a tanning bed, even have a little keychain so that they can go and regularly do it. Why? Why do they increase their chances of cancer and making themselves age prematurely so that they might have a tan, so that they might look good, or they may look the way society has made them feel like they should look? You know, this morning, I want to say a few words about vanity. You see, vanity reaches all parts of our society. Vanity reaches all the way to our food, reaches to our cosmetics, reaches to our clothing and cars. It reaches everything. And this is not a problem that is just to our time period. Okay, this is a problem that that man has faced since the beginning of time. Okay, so we're going to talk a little bit about vanity. You know, vanity shapes the way that we see the world. Whenever we see nice cars, whenever we see nice clothes, we see nice homes, what do we automatically think? Boy, that person, they're successful. If I want to find a successful person, I'm going to find someone driving a Bugatti. Okay? I'm going to find someone that's got nice threads. If I want to find someone that's the definition of successful, I'm going to go look for this. That person. Beauty. Oftentimes, we equate beauty with quality and value. You wouldn't believe how much it increases your chances of getting a job just by being good looking. Because in our brains, we automatically think people are drawn towards beauty. People automatically think that if something is more beautiful, it's going to have more value. It's just going to be better. This is why we throw away so many foods. Because we don't think that they have as much value. It's also why we color our foods, right? We make them bright blues and bright reds. It is to entice people. Because we think that they're going to be better. Because they're brighter. You see? You see what beauty does? How it affects us and how it affects the way we view the world. When we think about education and degrees, we oftentimes trust those people a little bit more because we think that they are intelligent, they are wise. This is just the natural way that we look at things. But did you also notice that Jesus chose almost all of his disciples from the uneducated sort? Did you notice that? But this are the things that shape our world. Vanity. It impacts everything that we see and how we perceive it. This will eventually click over. There we go. If you look up the definition of vanity, you're going to find that it says excessive pride in or admiration of one's own appearance or achievements. Okay, that's going to be the definition of vanity. So it means that you are going to be consumed with how others see you. You're going to be consumed with pride and making sure that you are seen a certain way. And I added the last part, disregarding the opinion of God, because I think that's a really important part of this. You know, Philippians chapter 2, verses 3 through 4, it says, let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you look out not only for his own interest, but also the interest of others. You see, this is the opposite way of vanity. Oftentimes, we want to draw the attention to ourselves. We want people to recognize the things that we have done, the achievements that we have made, the cars that we drive, the clothes that we have on. And admittedly, it kind of does feel good whenever someone says, hey, that's a nice shirt. But we got to ask ourselves, how much is this shaping the way we make decisions? And what effect is that having on others? Notice that it says, let nothing be done through selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. Otherwise, what we might do is we might start creating jealousy. We might start be creating envy. We might be making people feel bad about themselves. What this is saying is, bring yourself down a few notches. Don't make it the goal to look better than everybody else, because our goal is to lift each other up. And if you're lifting yourself up, look at what I've done, look what I have. There is no way that you can do this. This is the Christian way. The Christian way says that we have to put others before ourselves, which means that there's hardly any room, no room, for vanity. And that can be tough. In 1 Samuel chapter 16 and verse 7, it says, "But the Lord said to Samuel, 'Do not look on his appearance or on the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For the Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart.'" And that's what you have to remember. Though we might value cars and clothes, though we might value degrees, we might value beauty here on earth, God doesn't recognize or look or care about any of that. And those are things that are really hard for us to get past. And to reconcile the fact that God doesn't care about the things that we care about. What that is also supposed to do for you is encourage you. This isn't just a lesson about telling you not to be vain, but it's also a lesson to encourage you that if you are not practicing in vanity, and if you do feel kind of lowly in things, that's okay. That's okay if you're not driving the nicest car. It's okay if you're not living in the nicest house, the nicest part of town. That's okay. God doesn't care. This is an encouragement. This is an encouragement to be humble and lowly. If you're lowly, that's great. But if you feel like you're up here, it's time to take a step down, is what Philippians tells us. God wants to equalize us. So my question to you is, how would your lifestyle change if no one was watching? It's a really good question to ask yourself. If you look back and you reflect on how you live, the things that you buy, the things that you do, how would it change if nobody was watching? You know, there's things that I buy, there's things that I do that I enjoy, but whenever I really get down to the bottom of it, of whether or not I would do this if nobody else was watching, I'm not sure that I would. You know, there's things that, like, if you make a new purchase and you really, really just want to call someone and tell them, guess what's happening there? You've got a little bit of vanity popping up. That's something that we have to watch out for. Because the moment that we want to make a phone call to tell somebody, the moment we want to post a picture to show someone, to everybody, especially on Facebook, what have you, that's the moment that we need to ask ourselves, why are we posting this? Why are we sharing this? Why are we telling this? Is it because we want to do somebody else good? Or we want somebody else to see what we just got? See the difference there? See, God tells us to take the things that we have, the money that we have, and use it to buy and do things that do good for other people. But if we're using those things to only just try to draw attention to ourselves and the accomplishments that we've done, that could be a problem. There's nothing wrong with success, only how you use it. I think that Mark chapter 8, verse 36 sums this up really well for us. "For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his own soul? For whoever is ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of him the Son of Man will also be ashamed when he comes in the glory of his Father and with his angels." The first part of Mark chapter 8 really covers what we've already talked about. If we set out to try to gain, to fill our belly and to be able to show others what we can do, Jesus is offering us a warning. Be careful. What will you give in exchange? Because if you're devoting all of your time and all of your efforts into doing something so that you can be seen, or doing something so that you can have other people have a better opinion of you, Where is that time not going? Where is that focus not going? It's not going to God, right? Whenever we say yes to one thing, we say no to another. That's one of the best lessons that I have learned in my life. When I say yes to vanity, I say no to God. Take that with you. We make choices all the time. And we have to ask ourselves and get to the bare bones of why are we making these choices. The next part of it is also vanity. The fact that he says in verse 38, whoever is ashamed of me. You see, and this is a part of vanity that we don't think about. The person that's quiet, keeps to themselves, doesn't speak up when they maybe need to because they're afraid of what people will think of them. You see, I don't want you to just think about the vain person as being the one that is the big show off. That's not the only type of vain person. But the person that cares more about how other people will judge and perceive them than to stand up for God. That person could come across as quiet and lowly. But what have they done? In fear of someone thinking like, oh man, that person's weird, right? In fear of that, they've decided to say nothing. That's also vanity. So Mark chapter 8 covers both types. The ones that are up here and the ones that might seem down here. Now, the other part of vanity, maybe you might say the other half of it. Okay, so one part of vanity is the part that we've talked about where it's all about showing off and gaining things and the problem with that. But another definition of vanity, okay, so this is the second part, is vanity is the quality of being worthless or futile. You see, what this does now, if you take the two definitions of vanity, you look at the first one, that's a problem. And you take a look at the second one, you think, this is how I'm going to find the solution. Because this is how I realize that all these things that I'm placing importance on, all these things that are controlling my life and the way I do things, mean nothing. So if you're feeling bad from the first part, use the second part to make the change. Use the second part to convince your mind that some things have got to change in your life, and this is why. In Ecclesiastes chapter 2, I think pretty much the whole book is about vanity and about all the ways these things just kind of fade away. And I think that Solomon, the writer, probably does the best job in explaining it to us. Read with me. I made my works great. I built myself houses. I planted myself vineyards. I made myself gardens and orchards. And I planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made myself water pools from which to water the growing trees of the grove. I acquired male and female servants and had servants born in my house. Yes, I had greater possessions of herds and flocks than all who were in Jerusalem before me. Now, minus the servants part, I don't need those. This sounds pretty good to me. This man, he's got houses, he's got herds and flocks, he's got orchards and nice ponds and pools of water. This is the kind of life I wouldn't mind to have. Solomon's got it pretty good. And I like that part. And I can understand why he would want those things. In verse 8 it says, I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the special treasures of kings and of the provinces. I acquired male and female singers, the delights of the sons of men and musical instruments of all kinds. So I became great and excelled more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me. If you remember, Solomon was the wisest man to walk the earth, right? So he's saying, I had it all. There was nothing, and he tells you later on in the book, there was nothing I didn't do. There was nothing that I withheld myself from. I tried everything, tried it all, and at the end, look at the conclusion that he comes to. Verse 10, whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my reward for my labor. Listen here. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had done, and on the labor in which I had toiled, and indeed, all was vanity and grasping for the wind. There was no profit under the sun. That's a really humbling thing to think about. Because I don't know about you, but I try really hard. I work really hard to try to make something of myself, and to try to provide for my family, and to gain things and gather things and do things. I try hard. I can bet that you probably do too. But at the end of it, at the end of the thought, the man that had everything, the man that accomplished it all, nothing left undone, said, none of it was worth it. And I can kind of relate in a way. Because whenever I think about myself 10 years ago to myself now, I can't tell you that I'm really that much more satisfied in my soul than I was 10 years ago. I actually find myself kept up late at night. I find myself troubled. I find myself stressed. I don't find any comfort in the achievements that I've made. And you see, this is the whole problem with the difference between the flesh and the difference between the spirit. Is the flesh says, you want more, you want more, you want more, and it'll make you feel better. It'll make you feel fulfilled. It's going to do things for you. And the spirit says, there's no profit under the sun to these things. Use your time better. But your body keeps on saying, your eyes keep on saying, your brain keeps on saying, more, more, more. You have gaps, you have holes to fill. They're just right over there. A few more hours, a little more work, you'll have it. But the man with all the wisdom in the world came to the conclusion that there is no profit under the sun to any of these things. If we go back into Ecclesiastes chapter 1, he tells it to us in a different way. He says, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? One generation passes away and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. The sun rises and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it arose. The wind goes toward the south and turns around to the north, and the wind whirls about continually and comes again on its circuit. Do you guys see what he's saying here? Do you see what he's getting at? He's saying this stuff never ends. The earth just keeps on going around the sun. The wind just keeps on blowing. It's a continual cycle. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place from which the rivers come, they return again. All things are full of labor. Man cannot express it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear hearing with feel, nor the ear filled with hearing. What he's saying is, just as the sun comes up and leaves, just to come back around, just as the river flows into the ocean, just to be taken back up to do it again, there is work, there is labor happening continuously all the time. And guess what? It all returns to the point of origin. Guess what? All that you've done, all that you do, all that you've accomplished will return to some point of origin. And you're not taking it with you. He actually kind of gets depressed in this chapter because he says, all these things that I'm doing, some other man that didn't earn them will take. It's all worthless. But what I love about Solomon is he doesn't leave us in despair. He doesn't leave us with the idea that life is pointless. He doesn't leave us thinking that we're toiling away for no reason and that we're here and living these years for naught. He ends the chapter in a way that is meant to encourage us, in a way that is meant to satisfy us and to show us how we can have true satisfaction. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. Your spirit and your body are always in conflict with one another. That's just the way it's going to be, always. And what he is saying is, I gave my body everything it desired. And I'm telling you now that it meant nothing. And if you want to have a fulfilled life, if you want to know what your purpose is to fear God and keep his commandments. That's it. You'll feel a lot better about yourself. You'll feel a lot less stressed. You'll have more rest, I think. You'll be better off. Everybody around you will be better off if you quit being so vain. When you work to lift others up rather than just yourself, and you focus on what Solomon says really matters, fear God and keep his commandments. That's all I have for you this morning. Appreciate you being here. Appreciate your kind attention. And I hope that you will go away with something that you might be able to apply to your life. I know that this is something that I'm going to be working on myself. I struggle with this. And it wasn't until I started going down this rabbit hole of food coloring that I realized that this is a bigger problem in my life. Because whenever I ask myself, why am I doing these things? Well, and why am I doing these things? And what would I do if nobody was around? Then I started to peel back layers. I peeled back layers of things I probably wouldn't do. Work I probably wouldn't put in on certain things. And it's freeing. It's freeing if you do that. Now, I got to implement it. That's a different story. And Delaney is going to be holding me to this, I think. She'll be reminding me of this sermon 2 months from now, whenever I am freaking out about something. But I hope that you'll take this with you. You might be able to apply it and it'll be a benefit to you. If there's anybody here this morning that has something in their life that they need to repent of, if you're struggling with something, if you struggle with vanity, and you don't necessarily want to tell us what that is you're struggling with, but you know that it's something that is standing in your way between you and God, and you're spending more time with material things and trying to gain so others can see you, rather than spending time with God and keeping his commandments and fearing him, if that's a problem that you're having in your life, now is a good time for you to come forward and talk about that. Let that be known. You don't have to tell the details. Nobody needs that. But if you need it off your heart, now's a good time to do it. If you haven't obeyed the gospel, now's the perfect time for that. If you want to start your path, we have water here. We can baptize you this morning. And then you can begin to fear God and keep his commandments. And join the fold. If there's anybody here that needs to come forward, please do as we stand and sing the selected song.